Interface. Not the same question, not the same answer.
Hello, I'm Brad Johnson, and welcome to Interface, an examination of Christian perspectives on thought, faith, and culture with Adam Ayers, the pastor of Disciples Church in Costa Mesa, California, and the founder of the Stoa Foundation. Also joining us in the studio today are Wendy Vaughn and Chris Holowaty. And today we thought we would talk about what we really own. What do you really own? Do you own that piece of music that you just wrote? Do you own the words that just came out of your mouth? What do you own? With the advent of the computer program Napster, which allows computer users to freely share music, there's a big stir in the record industry over whether those people trading copyrighted songs are breaking the law. And technically, I guess it's being decided that they are, and Napster has been asked to close its doors. They've gotten a stay of execution, but in the meantime, people are still freely trading copyrighted songs. I did log on to Napster recently, took a look, and saw plenty of Christian artists' songs being passed around. And an interesting quote that I heard from somebody once was, "This is a song that the Lord gave to me, and now I'm going to charge you to use it." So it's an interesting thing. I mean, can we put a copyright on things and say that they're ours and say that nobody else has any right to use that idea or that melody without giving us money for it? And should we be able to copyright our version of the Bible? Look on the inside of your Bible. There's probably a copyright there. So any thoughts?
Defining ownership in music. How much is too much? How much money should you get paid? Is there a limit? How much are they really losing by Napster being out there? Are they really losing? I don't know that I can agree that they are losing as much as they say they are, and I think they're losing more ego, and it's hurting their ego to have it, Napster, as a resource for people, individuals, listening to music on the internet.
I have to say, I think Napster is, as a program goes, very cool. I have downloaded quite a bit of music from Napster and started out by justifying it, saying that I will only download things that I've already purchased and have, you know, either traded away or have lost or whatever, and built up quite a collection of music that I had previously owned, thinking that, well, I've already supported this person's family plenty. I've bought this album at least once, sometimes twice, and now I just want some of the songs off it. So, downloading them. And then also found it to be a very interesting way to be able to hear songs that I would not normally go out and buy, not normally, you know, because it would mean buying somebody's complete disc or trying to track it down somewhere so I could hear a bit of it and say, is this something that I really want to own? And so I'll download a song. If I really like it, chances are good, I'll go buy it. Have I gone out and bought anything that I've downloaded? I intend to.
Good intentions are on the way to hell. What is
the road to hell is paved with good intentions, right?
Using Napster for the artists, their concern that I've heard is that songs getting on the internet that they never intended to be on the internet for people to hear. So they're getting material and designs and music or so forth, designs of songs that they never intended to have other people hear. And it seems to disturb them that that's getting out there faster than they can control it. And it seems to be more of a control issue and a power trip than it does than about music and, oh, I'm an artist and I need to protect my artwork, so to speak. So my feel on the whole thing is I can understand this extreme of it, like Madonna having a majority of her new songs out on the internet and accessible to the public and people hearing them before they're on her new album. But is this a plus for her? Possibly? I would think so. Because it isn't record producers out there on the internet grasping at all these songs and going out and making a buck. Brad, are you turning around and selling these things? Are you listening to them as it was intended for your own pleasure at home? I would think most people, that's what they're doing.
I will say that the material that they might not want people to pass around gets passed around anyway. The internet, and particularly Napster, just makes it easier to get to. You know, people who are big fans are going to pass that between each other. You know, it was a big thing to pass it back and forth on tape, and now they can pass it digitally quickly with files. The internet just makes it so easy to access any kind of information. They're not going to be able to stop it very easily. And so I think what people are working hard to do right now is to find a way to regulate it, or more importantly, to make money off of it.
Part of what we're talking about is the whole issue of bootlegging, which is what people were doing before, just getting tapes or whatever. And one thing that really upsets artists is when they have worked so hard to craft something and to create something and have put a lot of energy and a lot of time and sometimes a lot of money into creating a particular piece of music, that they expect to be compensated for it. It's like any type of work. If I go and I'm hired on as a tradesman to build a house, I'm expected to be paid for my efforts. If I have spent time developing my skill as a house builder, I expect to be paid to build this house. The same thing goes with artists with music. And I'm obviously taking another side of this, but if I have spent years training as a musician and someone hires me to play the piano or play the guitar on a particular piece of music, it's assumed that I would get paid for that. If I come up with a song on my own and pay an engineer and record it and hire instrumentalists and do all this kind of stuff and put all this money into creating a product, for someone to say, well, why can't I just have access to that for free, seems kind of rude.
Well, taking another tack on it, I can't follow the analogy of the house builder, but just to take it strictly with the music, if there's a particular artist that I like, and the artist has released something officially that I can purchase, and I purchase and I enjoy it very much, and let's say this person's an incredible guitarist. Now, every time they do a solo, it's different. Every time those notes go off into the air, it's a definite work of art. And if somebody's there with a recorder and captures that person's music, and it's a one-of-a-kind event, there may not be any way to access that except to share tapes between one another or to pass those over the internet. Now, maybe that person, I don't know, it seems kind of odd. It's like, well, if you pay me for this event in Philadelphia, then you can hear these notes. But if you weren't at the event in Philadelphia and did not pay the admission, then you should not be able to hear those notes or this particular expression. It seems kind of funny. Some of the people that I enjoy listening to very much have encouraged their fans to pass tapes around because it really just builds up their fan base and makes it stronger, and I don't think it's really hurt the sales of their official product. I know it's kind of getting off the subject of people's released product being freely traded, but still, we do have quite a system of payment and compensation for people's art. There are a lot of people that have a lot of interest in, you know, besides the artist, in people's art and them getting paid for it.
It seems that from a moral and ethical and really a Christian religious stance, there are a number of issues at play. The most basic of these seems to be the issue of the limitedness of human life, that each person only gets a certain amount of energy from their life, motion over distance from a particular lifetime. And with that energy, they can do something. It might be moving sand from one pile to another. It might be singing songs. It might be stacking bricks. It might be drawing pictures. But what is done with that life is really the representation, the burning up of that life. And we turn our lives into actions. And somehow there is a connection between our life and our action, that X amount of heartbeats and X amount of breaths were spent on something. And so it becomes really a moral issue of how are we treating someone's life by treating what they have spent their life upon. And we tend to say, if I hire you to flip burgers at a rate of $5 per hour, you're not making anything. You're changing something, and you're moving something and creating some sort of action within the universe. Or if I hire you to dance, you're moving your body in certain ways. You're being contracted to use your life for something. So it becomes a moral issue of how do we treat the way that someone has used their life? Do we protect that, or do we open that up? And because of that, it moves into all kinds of issues of and this is the secondary part, ownership and justice and adequate compensation. This brings in a very complex relationship of people to stuff and people to ideas and people to things. So that, for example, using your analogy, Chris, if one builds a house, then one has used one's life in a certain way, and then one can be compensated for using their life in that way. Even though the materials weren't necessarily theirs, their labor was. Or they can be compensated for the thing. It was somehow your house. Well, how did you get the materials for the house? Well, I turned my life into dollars, and then I use those dollars to turn those into boards, and then I use those boards to construct the house. And so we're really parceling out pieces of our lives into this house, and then you sell the house. And hopefully you get more pieces of someone else's life represented by little green slips of paper than you put into that house. So now you're accruing people's life energy to yourself by getting more hunks of other people's lives than you expended from your life on this house. That's a very tricky situation, because now you're saying the whole goal of this is to get more from other people's lives than I have expended from my life. And that brings a very basic sense of justice here. Yes, is it just to take somebody's music and not compensate them? At the same time, what about the other disparities between investment and return? We're really using people as a human, a human resource, as a commodity, and making profits off of them. Again, back to the house. One of the difficulties I find with intellectual property is that if I sell you a house, it's your house. And if I agree to sell you a CD with my music on it for $16 and then say, you don't own this CD, you don't own these songs on it, you own the right to use these songs in certain ways. Have I sold you those songs? Have I sold you that event? So what if I played that and then recorded my room? I'm not playing your song. I'm playing the event that happened in my room when I was playing your song. You see, it gets to be a very interesting situation. So you record a concert, but that is copyrighted. And then if you play the CD in your house, that musical event is not copyrighted. And so at what point do you really stop having control over something? And as Christians, we have to begin to ask, what is justice? What is ownership? What is human life? What does it mean to honor other human life? And I think this is a serious issue for Christians because, okay, why not stir one more into the pot? I can't think of how many Christian merchandising efforts simply copy the substance of an idea from a secular advertising or a secular template, throw Christian ideology and phrases into it, and utilize it as a mockery, but to say, oh, this is distinctly Christian, when in reality, we have stolen the substance, the essence of someone's idea, and turned it to our own use. In the name of the Lord, I can't say that that is moral or ethical. And yet we tend to do that, even so far as borrowing business principles and applying them to the church.
So what you're saying, as far as the analogy I use with the house builder, if I build a house and I sell it to someone, what they do with that house is up to them. If they find a way to make additional money off of that house that I built, far beyond what I would have thought of or projected, I don't have a right to say, hey, wait a minute, you know, that wasn't part of the deal. You're not allowed to make more money off of something that I built. In the same way, that's what we do with music, though. I mean, we do that with music.
And more like leasing. If I lease the house to you, do you have rights to use that house how you want? Do you have a right to let somebody else live in that house? Do you have a right to have multiple roommates live in that house? What is the degree of control that I retain over these? For example, we don't say CDs on lease for $16.99 at warehouse because they wouldn't sell. And we don't say playwrights, not in the sense of W-R-I-T, but R-I-G-H-T, playing rights for sale at Virgin. We say music for sale. But as far as legally, it's not music that's for sale. It's playing rights that are for sale. And that's sort of the duplicity that's coming back to bite the industry, is that it says, we're going to sell you music, and we're going to sell you experiences that are yours, and we're going to sell you these artists. And we're not selling you any of those. We're leasing the right to have an experience to you. And now that's coming back.
Part of this whole discussion goes into the whole topic of ownership. and which is the basis of our society. I mean, we live in a capitalistic society that is based on the idea of you get to have certain things that you call your own, and you use these things to protect your family, to gain more for yourself. I mean, it's the whole basis of what we are. If we run out there and say we think that ownership is wrong, or that if we actually look at the way the universe is structured and recognize the way the Native Americans did, that the land is just the land. You don't own the land. It is what it is. It's the earth, you know. How can you say that you own a certain acreage? That's ridiculous. It was ridiculous to them. Unfortunately, people who had different ideas were stronger and got to push them out of the way. But our society is very much based on the idea of ownership. And I think that's why it's very difficult for us as Christians to let go of that idea. I mean, I have a hard time of letting go. And it's interesting because I've been writing some music and I've got it now up on the internet. And I've had to wrestle with that stuff of going, this is something I wrote and I'm just putting it up there for free, you know, that people can just access, listen to, download, and do whatever they want with it. And yeah, it is technically copyrighted through the website, but I have no way of knowing if someone downloads it and uses it for something else, and I have no control over that. And I've had to wrestle with that issue of, well, are these songs mine? And that's the basic question. Because I thought up some words, because I arranged some notes, and because I put it onto a CD, does that really make this song mine?
Particularly when one considers, did you invent the idea of notes? Did you invent the idea of harmony and scale? Did you invent the words? Or did you simply arrange those things? So if we sample bits of the artist known as Prince, who was formerly known as the artist formerly known as Prince, and then you utilize those in a different arrangement, but they are all sampled bits of his songs, that is still copyright infringement. And yet those songs are words common to the English language, sampled, sounds common to human hearing, sampled, and rearranged. Yet somehow the arrangement is protected. And I think really what we're getting to here is what you were talking about, Chris. There's a very complex and obscure idea, which is ownership, that somehow the cup sitting over there has this invisible relationship to me, in which it is under my control. And that's the issue that Wendy brought up earlier, that do I have the authority or the control over this thing? And how do I express that, and what is given to me in that somehow I have this vague, non-defined relationship to the cup in which it is mine? And granted, especially Old Testament does support this because it prohibits things like theft. But we have to ask ourselves, is this because that there is a transcendent moral relationship in the idea of ownership? Or is this somehow more an expression of how human beings are to treat each other? That you are represented in the cup. And for me to seek my benefit over your benefit by taking the cup, that is now not about the cup and not about theft, but it is about me and about you and the motives of my heart, either of malignancy or benevolence toward you. And I think this is an issue that Christians, we really have to deal with. Are we malevolent toward the world when we steal their ideas and seek to mock them? Or are we benign and benevolent in doing this? And I think there are layers of intention there that really need to be examined.
Back to intentions. It comes down to a personal position. As a Christian, in ownership, we are bought with a price. So how do we treat the things we own? As Adam was saying, do I have empathy with Napster or with the artists? Both sides, I do. The world, Metallica, Madonna, formerly known as Prince, their life is within this world. And it is captured by these things they call music and so forth. So they take their strong arm and they get their attorneys and say, we're going to win because we have control and power. And as Christians, do we strong arm our fellow sister or brother in the Lord or in this world by saying, you can't take this from me? Or does ownership truly mean that gives me the power to give back to you everything I have?
I think it's really hard for Christians to accept the teachings of Christ when he says, if anyone asks anything of you, give it. If someone asks you for your shirt, give him your cloak as well. That makes us uncomfortable. I mean, whether it's because we have a natural antipathy towards communism, or whether it's just because it's ingrained inside of us to say that this is my stuff. You can't just walk into my house and take my dinner table. You know, that's my table. And it's something you brought up, Adam, and we've talked about this before. It's we want to, you know, raise the issue of, well, what if someone wants to be a thief? You know, we can't justify stealing. When God says, love one another and extend yourself towards someone, that's what your first response is to be. It doesn't give you the right now to offend someone else by taking their stuff. I mean, you can't work it the other way by going, well, God told you you're supposed to just let me have your stuff and I can come and take it. That would completely go against the whole concept that God's presenting there. But whether it's music or whether it's an idea or whether it's a product that I've made, I think as Christians, we need to all wrestle with the idea that everything that we make and do is something that has been given to us in the first place. I remember when I was in college and I used to do really well in certain classes. And a friend of mine always struggled with the same tests. He would always get C's, I'd always get A's. And one day he goes, how do you do it? How do you get A's on these tests? I looked at him and I just said, I'm smarter than you. And it's not really that big of a deal. I mean, it's not like I'm better than you, or it's not that I'm any more special. God just has given me a certain natural ability to be able to do this kind of stuff. So what? It's just gifts. It's just stuff that God gives you and you play with. And this is your part of the sandbox and someone else has a different part. But when you start to have that, this is mine, there's something that just rubs wrong with the heart of God, I think, when we do that.
When you say that, Chris, I can't help but think of Paul the Apostle when he writes to the Corinthians and he says, what do you have that you have not received? Or who makes you to differ one from another? Now, if you received it, why do you glory as if you had not received it? In that section, he's talking about factions, about glorying over one against the other. And I can't help but think of how we tend to approach our distinctions as that one thing that we can use to market ourselves, our distinctives, that which makes us unique and good and marketable, whether it be intelligence or charm or strength or coordination, any of these things. Why do we keep saying this is ours? And when that comes to mind, perhaps we can deal with this on one of our next shows. I can't help but think, how does this play out in the church? Why do we seek to have copyrights on certain study Bibles? Or better yet, why do we seek to market distinctives of a particular church? Come to Bob's church. It's where the Spirit really moves. And yet I can't help but think, okay, when Reverend Bob gives his sermons, does he pay royalties to all the people he quotes? Or to the books he read? Or to the other movements he may have taken those, or they may have taken those strategies from? We have a lot of work to do here. When we begin to point fingers and say, that is stealing and I am not a thief, or this is my distinctive. And again, like Wendy brought up, the idea that we are not our own. We are the product of someone else's creativity. That someone designed us, created us, made us, that we rebelled, and then he bought us again. And so really, we're just the artist drawing Mickey Mouse. It's not our Mickey Mouse. It's Disney's. It's work for hire. All copyrights belong to Disney Corporation for this statement. But it's not ours. We're just doing what we're told we are, miserable servants. And in the same way that it would be theft if I was a designer for Chrysler and I took that car design and I went out and I marketed it for my own gain, if the Lord has given me a talent, a thought, a breath, a word, then all of those are his, and it is theft for me to take them and use them for myself. Which really means that I have to ask permission for how much salary I'm going to get on anything that I do. How much of this, Lord, can I have? And it's probably going to be a very minimal salary because all the gains go to the corporation.
Well, I believe we've run out of time and we're just really starting to get into this discussion about ownership and being owned. So feel free to take this show. I don't believe this is copyrighted. And steal this show. Give it to your friends. Make copies of it. Thanks to Adam Ayers, Chris Holowaty, and Wendy Vaughn for being here today. Thanks to Narcissa Studios for helping to make Interface possible. And thanks to you for listening.